Alrighty, we are up to Romans, the 13th chapter. We did Romans 12 last week, and like I was saying, you know, when we started the Romans study, it's a very unique book, a very interesting book. It's almost like a Bible within a Bible, and the first 8 chapters really fit into the same line of sanctification through grace and different storylines like that. Then we get into the amazing chapters of 9 through 11 with the tribes of Israel and the redemption of Israel through there, all falling in again into one theme. And then all of a sudden last week, boom, we go into a whole different chapter, chapter 12. They really didn't have anything to do with any of that, talking about spiritual gifts and being a living sacrifice to Yahweh. And now we get into chapter 13, which is pretty much the same. Now we're taking another turn here. So Paul is talking about our service to Yahweh, the administration of that, the gifts of that. And then he gets into chapter 13, the whole chapter basically being on submission. And the question has always come up. Verse 1, let every soul be subject to the higher authorities, for there is no authority except Elohim, but the existing authorities have been ordained by Yahweh. So people ask the question with Romans 13, is he talking about government within the congregation, or is he talking about government within the world? And I think that you could make a case for either way, but I think when you look at it, let every soul... So he's not just talking about some, but everybody, be subject to all the higher authorities. For there is no authority except from Elohim, but the existing authorities have been ordained by Elohim. So I think when you look at it, it's talking about all authority. I think he's making it all inclusive. Remember what's going on at this time? Thank you. That we said in the beginning of the book of Romans, that Paul is writing this in 58 AD. So it's not the time yet of the Great Revolt. The Great Revolt was 66 to 70. But it is a time where there are revolts, a lot of revolts. So it's a time where you know, people are fighting against the Roman government. They're coming up. So I think that what Paul is going to try to do in this chapter is he's going to try to bring into play two things. Number one is government authority, you know, that even if a government is bad, and, you know, we look in the world today, I don't think you can get a much worse world government than you see today, but I don't know if today is much worse than what Rome was, you know. There was a lot of evil things going on in Rome. Josephus tells us there were times during the Great Revolt where 500 Jews a day were being crucified right here in the Holy Land. So Paul is trying to say, under no circumstance should we become rebellious, though, you know, to the higher authorities. And also, he's going to show that part of that authority is also in his congregation, though. You know, the congregation should be no different. There's a reigning government in Yahweh's congregation. From the Garden of Eden, we've really had two sets of government going on in the world, the government of Yahweh and the government of Satan. So this is where he's coming from. Let every soul be subject to the higher authorities, for there is no authority except from Elohim, but the existing authorities have been ordained by Yahweh. Daniel 4 and verse 17. Daniel 4 and verse 17. Sometimes I like to read the chapter first and then go over it verse by verse, depending on the chapter. This isn't one of them. We really need to do that. We can just be taking it verse by verse and reading it. Daniel 4 and verse 17. Talking about Nebuchadnezzar here, you know, and the dreams he's having. And says, this matter is by the decree of the guarding cherubs and by command by the word of the holy ones, so that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he will, and he sets up over it the lowest or the basest of men. So, face it, in Satan's society, in Satan's government, you know, you're not going to get the best people that are there. And in the world today, it's kind of sad to look at it, but in almost every country you look at, really no leaders are for their people. you know, all the leaders, no matter what government, they all have agendas, they all have what they're doing, they're all for whatever. But it doesn't take the responsibility away that Yahweh still allows it, you know, that Yahweh allows these things to happen, and all authority comes from Yahweh. So when we're rejecting even worldly government, you're rejecting Him at the same time. Titus 3 and verse 1. Titus 3 and verse 1. Says, remind them to be obedient and submissive to rulers and authorities, to be ready in every good work. Remind them to be obedient and submissive to rulers and authorities, to be ready in every good work. In Ephesians 4, when we're talking about the congregation, Ephesians 4 and verse 11. And indeed, He has assigned some to be apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, some shepherds, some teachers, for the perfecting of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the building up of the body of Messiah, until we may all come to the unity of the faith and the full knowledge of the Son of Elohim, to a full-grown man, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Messiah, so that we may no longer be children, being blown and carried by every wind of false doctrine of men, who through their craftiness are very skillful in deceiving the people. So again, we see that the basis of leadership, whether it's worldly government or it's congregation, is to serve the people. Unfortunately, in the world, we don't see this much. Even sometimes in the congregation, we could have bad examples. But it doesn't take away the fact of judicial order. It's not up to us to decide, because we don't believe in this leadership, or we don't believe in this government, that we're going to start to rebel. And it's kind of interesting if you think about it. As bad as things were during this time in Israel when Yeshua was alive, you know, the things that were going on, where did the revolt get them? Got them nowhere. Got them the destruction of the temple. It got them losing the nation. It got them expelled and cast out. So did Yahweh honor that? Of course not. He didn't honor the rebellion. He didn't honor them fighting the government. And, you know, Yeshua's philosophy was, well, if you love your enemy and you do good to your enemy, he's not your enemy anymore. And each person that goes from enemy to friend, pretty soon you have no enemies anymore and everybody's your friend. So that's where his philosophy was more, was loving your enemy. We see that right before Paul gets into this. Remember, like we said, chapter breaks are not in there. They're put in there much later. So right before this, what is he talking about? Then if your enemy hungers, feed him. If he thirsts, give some drink. For doing this, you heap coals of fire on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome the evil with good. So try to do this. I remember a story years ago when we were living a little bit closer toward Tel Aviv. And by a miracle, we had an apartment that was given to us by somebody. We were living there for a while. And the neighbor was a Russian guy that was absolutely mad. I mean, He was a big, big, brawly guy, and I mean, just always screaming and yelling, and many had come in screaming at us in Russian. We had no idea what he was talking about, but we were kind of scared of him. So I said to Petra one, I said, well, you know, he's a Russian man, he's probably an immigrant, he's probably under a lot of pressure, and I was reading this scripture. I said, why don't I go out and buy him a bottle of vodka and give it to him as a peace offering? So I went and bought a bottle of vodka, knocked on his door, you know, and I said, for you, you know, and he was looking, and then the wife came, and she spoke a tiny bit of English, and I said, no, we were just buying a present for your husband. She said, no, he can't drink this, he's got a heart condition. But from that day, he never screamed at us again. He was so touched that, who's these people that he doesn't even know, and they're giving me a bottle of vodka. So, you know, and you never know, if your enemy hungers, feed him. If he thirsts, give him drink. That's what we're thinking. So the same thing here. Let every soul be subject to the higher authorities, for there's no authority except from Elohim, but the existing authorities have been ordained by Elohim. So that the one resisting the civil authority has opposed the ordinance of Elohim, and the ones opposing will receive judgment for themselves. It's pretty simple. Very clearly, the one resisting the civil authority. So this is where some people, because they say, oh, civil authority, they're thinking it's just talking about worldly government. But in the congregation, there's civil authority. Civil authority just means organized authority. That there's an organized authority like we read here. If we go to Exodus 16, Exodus 16, 2 and 3, and then I'll drop down to verse 6. Exodus 16, 2 and 3. And all the congregation of the sons of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron in the wilderness. And the sons of Israel said to them, "Would that we died by the hand of Yahweh in the land of Egypt, and are sitting by the flesh pots, and are eating bread to satisfaction. For you have brought us into this wilderness to kill all this assembly with hunger." And Yahweh said to Moses, "Behold, I am will rain bread from the heavens for you. And the people shall go out and gather the matter of a day in its day, that I may test them whether they will walk in my Torah or not." Drop down to verse 6. And Moses and Aaron said to the sons of Israel, "Evening you shall know that Yahweh has brought you from the land of Egypt. And in the morning you shall see the glory of Yahweh, in his hearing your murmurings against Yahweh. And we? What are we that you murmur against us?" And Moses said, "When Yahweh gives you flesh to eat in the morning and bread in the morning, to satisfaction, when Yahweh hears your murmurings, which you are murmuring against him, you will see, and what are we? Your murmurings are not against us, but against Yahweh." So very, very clearly, you know, when we murmur, whether that's in the congregation or it's against our civil leaders, you know, the Bible says not to disrespect the leadership. Doesn't mean you have to like what they're doing. You can reject the policies that they're bringing about, you know, and openly condemn them if they're against the word of Yahweh. But it doesn't mean that we should disrespect the leaders or the leadership, whether that's a civil government or whether it's within the congregation. He says, "For the rulers are not a terror to good works, but to bad. And do you desire not to fear the authority? Do the good and you will have praise from it." So again, there's an arrogancy that comes here when people stand against government. And I'm 50 years old, and there's been different times in my life where there's been civil unrest. I know when I was a young boy, right before I was coming into high school, they were having, in the town I lived in, quite a bit, different racial riots that was going on at that time. But I don't think in my life I've ever seen, on a worldwide scale, so much civil disobedience against authority than we see today. You know, I mean, you look at the Arab Spring, you look at what's created the situation here in the Middle East, is literally people fighting government. And it's everywhere in the world, you know, that basically you don't like what's being done, you go to the streets, and you don't just go to the streets peacefully. I mean, you break, you kill, you maim, you do whatever you have to do until you get what you want. So this is what he's saying here, you know, "For the rulers are not a terror to good works, for the bad. And do you desire not to fear the authority? Do the good and you will have praise from it." 1 Peter 2, 13 and 14. You see people today fighting against police. You see people just doing all kinds of just crazy, crazy things. And it seems like they just have no fear of Yahweh. 1 Peter 2, 13 and 14. Says, "Then submit yourself to all human authority for the sake of the Almighty, whether to a king because of their supreme power, and to judges because by them officers are sent for the punishment of offenders and for the praise of them that do well." And you don't see that today. You don't see the fear of Yahweh, and you don't see the fear of civil government. People not fearing, hey, the police are going to put me in prison or something like that. 2 Peter 2 and verse 10. 2 Peter 2 and verse 10. Talks again, and remember in the end time, when you read 2 Timothy 3, where it talks about people being lovers of self, boasters, proud, arrogant, you know, all these things. And 2 Peter 2, we are starting at verse 10, says, "And especially will he punish those who follow after the filthy lusts of the flesh, and they have no respect for authority. Self-willed and arrogant they are, and they do not tremble when they blaspheme." Talk against Yahweh's leaders, talk about any kind of leadership against elders, they don't care. "We're cherubs, being greater in strength and power, do not bring against them the condemnation of blaspheming. But these men, like the dumb beasts, which by nature are for slaughter and destruction, speak evil of the things they do not understand, and will utterly perish in their own corruption. Being about to receive the wages of unrighteousness, as they consider it a delightful thing to revel in the daytime. They are spots and blemishes among you and sport themselves with their own pleasure feasting along with you in idleness." So these are sometimes people in the congregation, people that will come to a feast. And then instead of being thankful that you allow them to come and they're a guest, they'll talk against you. We had one year, people even trying to bring people somewhere else in another room trying to teach them against the doctrine. So this is the way some of these people are. Having eyes full of adultery and never ceasing from sin, seducing unsettled souls, having a heart being filled with covetousness, they are cursed children who have forsaken the straight path and have gone astray following the way of Balaam, the son of Beor, who loved the wages of unrighteousness, but who was rebuked for his own transgression, the dumb donkey, speaking in a man's voice, held back the folly of the prophet. These are springs without waters, clouds being driven by a storm, for whom the blackness of darkness has been kept forever. For while they speak astonishing words of vanity, they seduce with obscene lusts of the flesh them who have almost abandoned these that walk in error, while promising them freedom, though themselves being slaves of corruption. For a man is overcome by whatever it is that enslaves him. And I've seen this in Church of God. I saw people that came out of the world, came out of false churches, came into Church of God, you know, and understood church government. And then when the Church of God fell apart, they were more against anything dealing with leadership than you can ever imagine. Like it says, twice cursed children. Just would never, ever, ever be part of a congregation, be part of any leadership. So where would the kingdom be? Where on earth would they be from there? So it's a dangerous spot to be in. And Paul is warning us, we can't be like that. We have to respect all authority, whether good or bad. Now, the thing is, what's interesting is, he doesn't say we have to obey the authority. He says we have to be subject to it. And there's a big difference there. Because to obey authority would mean if the authority came in and said, you have to eat pork. You have to obey, you'd have to eat it. He's saying be subject to it. Being subject means that you're not going to fight against it, but it doesn't mean you're going to obey it. It means that you're not going to fight against it, which means that you're going to suffer the consequences. So if the civil authority comes to me and tells me that I have to do something that's violating the word of Yahweh, I'm not going to obey it. I'll be subject to it, which means if they want to put me in prison, they can put me in prison. If they want to fine me, I'm going to pay the fine. The same way today. If you're driving in your car, you're subject to the driving laws. So if I'm speeding or if I'm parked in the wrong place and I get a fine, I'm going to pay that fine. I'm not going to rip it up defiantly and say, I'm not going to pay that. No, of course. So I'm subject to it, but not necessarily obedient. You know, obedient where you can be, but not obedient where it's violating the law of Yahweh. So this is the question that comes up many times. You know, why would he say to be subject? And you have to understand the difference of obedience and subjection. Subjection means you're not fighting against it. Subjection means that you're going to suffer the consequences they're going to give you if you have to disobey it. But there are times we do have to disobey. Verse 4, for the ruler is a servant of Elohim to you for the good. But if you practice evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is a servant of Elohim, an avenger for wrath to the ones practicing bad things. This is where it seems to be he's talking more in the congregation. You know, so overall, I think he's talking about all government. And there's verses that make you think he's talking about civil government in the world. There's verses that make you think he's talking about within the congregation. Maybe he is. Maybe he's going back and forth, playing on this. Because of this, it is necessary to be subject not only on account of wrath, but also on account of conscience. So we were just saying this before. For evil people, you know, their conscience must eat them up all the time because they're doing evil things. We don't want our conscience to do that. So we're not only being subject because we don't want to follow the wrath, but our conscience. We want to make sure in a good conscience that we're not violating our conscience. Romans 14:23. If you go one chapter over. He says, but the one doubting if he eats, he has been condemned because it is not of faith. And whatever is not of faith is sin. Whatever is not of faith is sin. And we know this, that sometimes people will say to me, you know, when there's something that's an ambiguous subject, you know, let's take something like mixed clothing. You know, is it just that you don't wear mixed clothing of an animal and a plant? You know, like it says, when you don't wear wool and linen together? Or is it any mixture of clothing? You know, is it mixed clothing if you're wearing polyester and rayon? Two oils, two synthetics. Would you consider that mixed? Some might not. And I don't know if we really have the answer when we're looking at the scripture. It's ambiguous. But whatever is not of faith is sin. And if you think that it's sin, then don't do it. You know, you can't do it. You have to follow your conscience when it comes to some of these issues like that. So it's the same way here. When it comes to obedience to the higher authorities, you want to make sure that you're not violating your conscience. Verse 6, for on this account you also pay tribute, for they are servants of Elohim, always giving attention to this very thing. So I believe he's probably talking here about payment of elders and ministers. And we talked about this a little bit a few weeks back. And like I said, you know, as the leader of the congregation worldwide in the days we're living in, where so much of the good news is being marketed and put for money, I felt convicted years ago by Yahweh to not take money, salary from the congregation, so that I couldn't be accused of misappropriation of funds or doing something for money. And it's ironic, even now and then somebody will still say, you're only doing this for money. And it's like, well, I'm pretty stupid then, because I don't get any money. You know, I wrote 5 books that my name is on. I could sell that book. I wrote it, right? But I don't do it because I'm not doing it for money. We give everything away. So it's not about money. But many of our congregations, the elders do take money. In the Philippines, in Africa, many of them take tithe. You know, they'll take so much percentage of the tithes. If we go to 1 Corinthians 9, 1 Corinthians the 9th chapter, and we see there's nothing wrong with it. It's almost like when Paul was talking about being single, you know, and he says if somebody is married, it's good, but if they're single, it's even better. So it's the same way here. He says, am I not an apostle? 1 Corinthians 9. Am I not free? Have I not seen our master, Yeshua Messiah? Are you not my work and our master? If I am not an apostle to others, yet I am indeed to you, for you are the seal of my apostleship and the master. So the Corinthians were the ones he brought to faith. You know, he fathered them, like he says. He says, my defense and those examining me is this. Have we not the right to eat and drink? Have we not the right to travel with the believing wife as the rest of the apostles do? And Cephas and our master's brothers. Really interesting scripture. Because nowhere else do you ever see Peter's wife even being mentioned, except that he has a mother-in-law. If he has a mother-in-law, he's got to have a wife, right? But it's never mentioned there. But right here he's saying that the apostles are traveling with their wives. And Paul is saying, hey, are only the apostles? Don't we have this right also? Or is it only Barnabas and I who have no right to quit working? Who serves as a soldier at his own wages at any time? Who plants a vineyard and does not eat of its fruit? Or who shepherds a flock and does not eat the milk of the flock? And even if you go back in the 1800s, you know, when it was a time where there wasn't a lot of money, many pastors, you even see this sometimes like on Little House on the Prairie and stuff, people would pay them in potatoes, you know, and pay them in maybe corn or whatever they're growing at the time. Who serves as a soldier at his own wage at any time? Who plants a vineyard and does not eat its fruit? Or who shepherds a flock and does not eat the milk of the flock? Do I speak these things according to man, or does not the Torah say the same thing? For it has been written in the Torah of Moses, you shall not muzzle an ox treading out grain. Is Elohim concerned only for the ox? No, it is known that he said it for our sakes, and it was written because of us, so that the one plowing ought to plow in hope, and the one threshing in hope to partake of fruit. If we have sown spiritual things to you, is it a great thing if we shall reap of your fleshly things? If others have this authority over you, have we not the greater right? But we did not use this authority, but we endured all things so that we might not give a hindrance to the good news of Messiah. And that's exactly what I was just saying of myself. Do you not know that those laboring about the holy things are maintained out of the sanctuary? Those ministering on the altar partake with the altar. So also the master ordained those who preach his good news should live from his good news. But I have not used one of these privileges, and I do not write these things that it may be so with me. For it is good for me rather to die than that anyone declare my empty pride. For if I proclaim the good news, no glory is in me, for it is a necessity laid on me. And it is woe to me if I do not proclaim the good news. For if I do this willingly, I have a reward. But if unwillingly, I am entrusted with a stewardship. What then is my reward? That proclaiming the good news, I make the good news of Messiah free, so as not to abuse my authority in the good news. For being free of all, I have served all men, and that I might gain the more. So we clearly see, when you look at it, there's other scriptures I won't go into, but it's very clear. If you work by the good news, you could. And for me, particularly in third world countries, where some of these people are extremely poor, and they're working full-time in the ministry. Some of them don't even have bus fare to go to do baptisms. You know, I see no problem whatsoever in them taking tithe money to live on. You know, so I think it's a personal decision, but I've had people mock the fact and say that it's wrong for an elder to take money to live on. And we see right here, it's not only wrong, that's the way that the priests were sustained in the sanctuary. The tithe came in, and it sustained them. And I say, praise Yahweh, that I can try to set a higher standard, you know. But I'll tell you one thing, you know, years back when we first started, when it was really, really rough, it was tough. And what I believe is that if the congregation, and I say this to people that aren't tithing, there are people that are part of our congregation that do not tithe. I don't know what they're doing with their money. That's between them and Yahweh. But they don't tithe. Or they're using their tithe on their own. And that's where the congregation's not going to be blessed if something like that happens. Because there was a matter of almost 3 years where Gentiles sustained us. That if it wasn't for Gentiles, we would have starved. We had no money for living. We had no money for food. And Gentile people that saw what we were doing, Gentile Christians, backed us. And what I say is when that has to happen, it's a shame on the congregation. And I'm saying this because it's going to go online, that our congregations in Africa, our congregations in Asia, that if they have elders that are good elders, and these elders don't have food for their family, shame on the congregation. You know, that it's the responsibility. But the same way here that I can relate to Paul, that I say, praise Yahweh, I don't have to take that right. You know, that I don't have to do it. Praise Yahweh for that. And I'm trying to set that example because we have had elders who misused money. We've had elders who have misused the tithe. And like a hawk, I have to watch over these people. And I try to get accountability. And any money that goes out to the congregations, we get receipts back. And there's checks and balances to it. Because we don't want to put a stumbling block before somebody. But at the same rate, like he says here, for on this account, you also pay tribute, for they are servants of Elohim, always given attention for this very thing. Then give all their dues to the one due tax the tax, to the one due tribute to tribute, to the one due fear the fear, to the one due honor the honor. So again, judicial order, you know, whatever is there. 1 Timothy 5 and verse 17. 1 Timothy 5 and verse 17. It says, let the elders who minister well be counted worthy of double pay, especially those laboring in the word and doctrine. For the scripture says, you shall not muzzle an ox treading out the grain, and the laborer is worthy of his pay. Matthew 22 and verse 15. Matthew 22 and verse 15. He says, then going, the Pharisees took counsel so that they might trap him in words. And they sent to him their disciples with the Herodians, saying, teacher, we know that you are true and teach the way of Yahweh in truth, and it does not concern you about anyone, for you do not look to the face of men. Then tell us, what do you think? Is it lawful to give the head tax to Caesar or not? But knowing their wickedness, Yeshua said, why do you tempt me, hypocrites? Show me the tribute coin. And they brought a denarius to him. And he said to him, whose image and inscription is this? And they said to him, Caesar's. And he said to them, then give to Caesar the things of Caesar, and to Elohim the things of Elohim. And hearing, they marveled, and leaving him, they went away. So we just read the scripture. Then give to all their dues, to the one due tax the tax, to the one due tribute the tribute, to the one due fear the fear, to the one due honor the honor. So give to Caesar what's Caesar's. And which also means is that the question comes up about taxes. And face it, back here it was the same thing, like I said. 500 Jews are being crucified a day, and they were probably saying, hey, if you're giving the money in taxes, you're supporting that. People could say the same thing today in Babylon, right? You're giving the money in Babylon, you're supporting abortion, you know, or you're supporting this. But what does Yeshua say? Give to Caesar what's Caesar, and give to Yahweh's what's Yahweh's. So if it's due, you know, if you're living in a system and you're working somewhere, and they're picking up your garbage, and they're providing policemen in your area, and the firemen are going to come if your house goes on fire, right? Then you're using services. And you should, every right, give to Caesar what's due Caesar, but give to Yahweh what's due Yahweh's. So that's very clear. And then he says, owe nobody anything except the continuing debt to love one another. For he who loves his fellow man has fulfilled the Torah. For do not commit adultery, do not murder, do not steal, do not bear false witness, do not lust. If there is any other commandment in this word, it is summed up in these words, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. And that comes from Leviticus 19:18. It's not a New Testament phrase. Leviticus 19:18 says, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. So this is where, when it's going back to, if your enemy hungers, feed him. If he thirsts, give him drink. In doing so, you'll throw heap coals of fire on his head. So when people say, sometimes, I'll just read the next verse. Love does not work evil to the neighbor, then love is the fulfillment of the Torah. Because in Matthew 5, verse 43, Yeshua said, you have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those cursing you. Do well to those hating you and pray for those who take you by force and persecute you, so that you may become sons of your Father in heaven, because he causes the sun to rise on the evil and the good, and he sends rain on the just and the unjust. For if you love those loving you, what reward do you have? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you only greet your brothers, what exceptional thing do you do? Do not the tax collectors do the same? Therefore you become perfect or complete, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. So people read this and they say, excuse me, love your enemies, bless those cursing you. How do you do that? Well, he just told us right here. Owe no one anything except the continuing debt to love one another. For he who loves his fellow man has fulfilled the Torah. Do not commit adultery, do not murder, do not steal, do not bear false witness, do not lust. And if there is any other command in this word, it is summed up in these words. You love your neighbor as yourself. Love does not work evil to the neighbor. Love is the fulfillment of the Torah. So when he's saying how you bless someone is by not breaking the commandments against them, by not lying to them, by not stealing to them, by not committing adultery to them. So it's not that you're blessing their evil, you know, or you're praying for them to be blessed in their evil. It's the way you're blessing them is by not giving back evil to them. That's with... Paul is expounding on Yeshua's words over here. Love does not work evil to the neighbor, then love is the fulfillment of the Torah. And what happens is, we talked about the conscience convicting. Sometimes when somebody is doing evil to you, and you're not giving evil back, you know, what happens? Sometimes they get convicted. I've seen this happen. I've had many, many stories of brethren telling me this in the workplace. You know, where one guy was a mechanic working in a place, and there was a guy who kept giving him a hard time and this and that, and he just kept helping this guy. And then the guy did something wrong on a job, and he went and fixed what the guy did wrong and didn't even take any credit for it. And the guy that was harming him got the credit and knew that the other guy helped him. And after that, he, from a spirit of guilt, he stopped giving the guy a hard time. You know? So by showing love to your neighbor, like it says in chapter 12, you know, by doing this, you heap coals of fire on his head. You know, because I mean, people are evil, but at the same rate, everybody has a conscience somewhere. It's just for some people, it's a really, really deep well to get down that far. But this is what he's saying. Love does not work evil to the neighbor, then love is the fulfillment of the Torah. Also knowing this, that now is the time and the hour for you to awake from your sleep, for now our salvation is nearer than when we first believed. Wow. And if that scripture is ever pertinent, I think it's right now that it's pertinent. The night is far gone and the day is drawn near. Then let us cast off the works of darkness and let us put on the armor of light. Take that, CERN. 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 4. 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 4 says, but you, brethren, are not in darkness, that the day should overtake you as a thief. You are all sons of light and sons of day. We are not of night nor of darkness. So then we should not sleep as the rest do, but we should watch and be sober. For those sleeping sleep by night, and those having been drunk are drunk by night. But let us who are children of the day be alert, putting on the breastplate of faith and love, and as a helmet put on the hope of salvation. Because Yahweh has not appointed us to wrath, but to the obtaining of salvation through our Master, Yeshua, Messiah. So, very clearly, you know, Thessalonians, Paul is reiterating what he's saying here in Romans. The night is far gone, and the day is drawn near. Let us cast off the works of darkness, and let us put on the armor of light. Let us walk becomingly, as in the day, not in all carousing and drunkenness, not in cohabitation and lustful acts, not in fighting and envy. And our note here says it was reported in early 2012 that for the first time in the USA, more than 50% of couples are cohabitating instead of marrying. Clearly a sign of the times we're living in. And here we are just a couple of years later, and now we're having homosexual marriage that is legal. And also, for the first time ever, 50% of children are being born out of wedlock. One out of two children are being born out of wedlock. That's a shocking statistic. So we're seeing very, very quickly things are spiraling in an immoral state, and there's nothing we see on the ground that looks like anything is going to change anytime soon. You know, this pope that's in there now, Pope Francis, who many people are calling the pope from hell, and Catholics are saying this. They're not very happy with him, you know, because there's the, when he came into office, there was the prophecy that he'll be the last pope and he'll destroy the Catholic Church. But since he's gotten in there, I mean, he's totally communist. That's an open fact. But bringing all of these things out now about going into world government and all these kind of things, he's really, people are just shocked. And like I said, not people outside of Catholicism who were shocked at the popes for the last 1700 years since Constantine the first pope, but people within Catholicism that are shocked at what this guy is doing and not standing up for the things that the Catholics normally do, such as being for marriage between a man and a woman and whatnot. So he says, let us walk becomingly as in the day, not in the carousing and drunkenness, not in cohabitation and lustful acts, not in fighting and envying, but clothe yourself with the Master Yeshua Messiah, and do not make forethought of the flesh for its lust. 1 Corinthians 9 and verse 27. 1 Corinthians 9 and verse 27 says, but I conquer and subdue my body so that by no chance when I preach to others, I myself will be disapproved. I've said this many times, that if you can get past the physical, the spiritual is very easy because there's one spirit, and the same spirit in Yahweh is the same spirit in Yeshua and the same spirit in us. But it's the physical where Satan tricks us and he stops us from submitting ourselves. And that's why we have to take our bodies into submission. We have to discipline ourselves through repetition to be servants of Yahweh. And like he says here, I love the way he puts it, but clothe yourself with the Master Yeshua Messiah. We know in Revelation 19 and verse 7, it talks about, you know, that the wedding supper can come because the bride has made herself ready, you know, and has washed her garments. She has white garments now. So literally, we're supposed to clothe ourselves with the Master Yeshua Messiah. You know, put on the armor of Yahweh and literally clothe ourselves with it. And like he says, knowing this, that now is the time and the hour for you to awake from your sleep, for now our salvation is nearer than when we first believe. So Romans, not necessarily one of Paul's epistles that's really a lot about end times, like we see in Thessalonians and some of the other ones. But here he's hitting at the urgency of the hour. So I think I am going to stop there for tonight. Next week we have chapter 14, which is a little bit of a longer chapter, and some issues there that are very much taken out of place, so it will be a good chapter to go through. But I think we will stop with 13 now, and we'll open up the floor if there's any questions.